welcome to Hour 2 of X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. My guest tonight is Rabbi Yossi Sebryansky. To his friends and the listeners of this program, Rabbi Yossi. We sometimes speak of comprehension, and this is purely relative to the individual and their particular aptitude, that is to say, their degree of learning. What is incomprehensible to one person may be very understandable to another. The presence of this fact means that there is no limit to this comprehension, unless we could instantly see the extent of that comprehension for every soul that ever lived on the face of the earth. I might add that if one could do that, he would immediately have raised his own ability to a sufficient level of comprehension. Now, sounds like a lot of philosophy, but is it designed to remain incomprehensible, or are we tasked to see it and seek it until we can? We'll find out after 40 seconds. Don't go away. X Squared Radio is coming right back. Whether far out into space, beyond the reach of the most powerful telescopes, or deep in the soul of the nearest sentient being, the universe may be folded up inside each one of us. This hour, let's consider it with Rabbi Yossi. Welcome back to the program.
Hello, welcome.
Well, we, in our last hour, talked about creation and how incomprehensible it may be to the individual as we consider it. But is it meant to remain incomprehensible to us, or are we ever inspired to try?
Some people are inspired to try and some not. I'm not going to tell people what they should or shouldn't be doing. But I think we have the brain, we have abilities, and I think we should use our abilities to the best of our, of what we can do. And we have an ability of comprehension, and we can comprehend a lot once we allow ourselves to.
I think a lot of people
have a problem is they judge themselves, they prejudge what they can or cannot do, and because of that, they don't get beyond themselves.
I agree with that. I think that allowing yourself is most of the battle.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Now, some would say that it isn't a matter of seeking it because, in fact, it isn't outside of us. It's rather a challenge of being it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think it is not a matter of chasing it because it is within and it's a matter of being. The problem with that is the following. A lot of people search to become spiritual and think they've come to the light. The light is it. There are people who think of they have this spiritual experience and that experience is God. They have definitions, expectations, and so when something comes into what they imagine is what it should be, they've come to where they need to be. But they don't see the limitation of that. And so a lot of people, for example, say you have to be spiritual, but if they believe in a soul and we come from a spiritual realm, it makes no sense that we come from a spiritual realm to come here just to go back. It makes more sense to say that if we're here, there's a reason to be here, because in the spiritual realm, we're only spiritual. Here, in the physical, we can accomplish something that we cannot accomplish if we're only spiritual.
Well, right. I mean, you don't have the limitations of the mortal body upon your imagination. You don't suffer pain, for instance. You don't feel the limitations of fatigue or of lack of imagination or experience. If you're totally spiritual and you stub your toe, you're not going to feel a thing, I think.
Right. But if we believe that there is a purpose in creation, we believe that we're here for whatever reason, even if we don't know it, if we live in the now, we are a spiritual, a soul, in a body. We have two parts of us, and they're together. And the reason they're together is because they're supposed to be together. So if we live totally in the present, we can transcend our spiritual limitations as well, because we accept both in the same space.
Excellent. Excellent. That's exactly, I think that's, I mean, wow, I have so much to say. The mortal experience, many people say that it is a curse, it is limiting us, but it really is not. I think you've really hit on it here, that the combination of the spirit inside the mortal body really takes the spirit to the next level, and it surely takes the body to the next level.
Correct.
I mean, were it not so, why would the great ones, the Moses, the Abrahams, the Jesus, why would the great ones come here to have a mortal experience when they were already such great spiritual beings?
Correct.
Sorry. I had to get something to drink.
You're asking me a question or you're saying a statement?
Well, I'm doing both. And then I was taking a drink.
Your thought is correct. If you question everything that exists, you question everything that happens, you come to a place where there is no real answer other than we have to accept that there are things beyond our ability to do. I'm going to give you an example of something, okay?
Okay.
How this applies. You've heard of biogenetic engineering of food?
Yeah.
Now, biogenetic engineering of food is a big problem, a very difficult and grave problem, and the consequences of it long-term can be very dangerous. But in the name of business, they do what they do. In the name of health and humanity, you wouldn't do that. It is very interesting. In the Zohar, the basic book of Kabbalah, a Jewish book written around 2,000 years ago, it says the following. It says when you make, it says that evolution happens naturally. There's a natural evolution. And according to the Bible, you can mix the same type of fruit with the same family of fruit, the same animals. You can mix within a family, but you cannot mix from one thing to another. And the Zohar says that when you mix, you have to know the movement of all the planets. You have to know all the emotional, spiritual, psychological elements of both elements before you mix them. So you know the precise moment that it's okay to make that mixture. And if you don't know all the elements in creation that affect it, the past, present, future, spiritual, physical, then you're not allowed to make the mixture.
Well, that makes complete sense. And having been a former Air Force member, and also having reviewed the typical government procedure for mixing things and trying things out, I see they do it exactly the opposite of what you just suggested. First they mix and see what happens. And then they decide it probably wasn't a good thing to do.
Right. So what I'm giving this an example to show that we as human beings often try to do things with an agenda, with an ego, with a limited space that we have, and we try to do things and think we're clever and great. that the essence is far beyond often what we see. But if we understand that everything is more than what we are, then we're always humbled by it. And then we always look for it. And when we do things, we don't exclude things. We try to include everything.
Sure, there would be great consideration. There would be great prospective, not just perspective and not just hindsight. Gee, I guess it wasn't a good thing that we mixed those two things together, was it? and one of the other things that I noticed about bioengineering, since you brought it up, the earth and all the minerals that are in it are basically the food that makes the seed grow into the plant and thus give forth fruit, which we then consume, whether it's the leaves, the stalk, the fruit, or the seeds of that plant. But the flesh that makes up that plant that we consume, either by eating the plant directly or eating the animal that eats the plant, right, it is from the earth, and thus the earth makes up our body, and therefore we resonate with the earth. But when we change that combination artificially, we cut DNA apart and splice in other DNA. Like, believe it or not, they splice in jellyfish DNA to make corn more resilient to pests. Now, those two weren't meant to be together, I can tell you. I don't think that you would throw jellyfish out on the cornfield and mix the two together. But that is, in fact, what happens. What is truly happening is the resonance between the planet and the beings that live upon it is beginning to artificially be upset.
Right. That's correct.
So people would say,
what I see, we can go into genetic engineering. There's a lot to talk about that. But what I see is that when we want to understand something, we have to come from it not just intellectually. We also have to come with our hearts. We have to come with both. There has to be a combination of our whole being in order to relate to something. If we only relate to it one part of ourselves, we're blind to everything else. And we as humans have the ability to be more than that. So whether it's in religion, whether it's in politics, whether it's in science, for some reason, people seem to ignore that. And so the people that seek what is the truth and what is beyond everything seem to be not the majority or not the people doing everything. But people really want the truth, I think. People really want to connect, but they're just not shown how to. And I think your program, from what I hear, and what I'm trying to do, is trying to help people see there is beyond what they've taught and learned, and they can do it themselves. Once people are aware and open, they search for it, they look for it, and they'll find it because they truly want it.
I couldn't agree more. And this awareness, I'm going to call it when you wake up, when you're awakened. There has to be a word for this in the scriptures. You know, we're not here just to breathe air and consume food and respirate, grow old, and die. We are here to not only have an experience and, of course, be acted upon by the universe, but we are here to act upon the universe and upon each other and to interact with one another, to love one another. And this experience changes the spirit within the body. Because face it, your spirit is being stressed just like your body is being stressed by the environment in which you live. But you can either go through it being acted upon, or you can turn on it and act upon it. That action is why you are here.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, I don't want to get too much into the genetic engineering, but we can definitely do that in the third hour. What I would like to do in this hour is try to discuss the very strange anthropological position we find our human race in upon this very rare planet in the middle of space. We have somehow, Rabbi, divided ourselves into tribes and traditions and races, and we don't get along. And I don't get it. What are we doing wrong?
What did we miss? That's a very good question. There are two different perspectives of this. One perspective is, what did we do wrong and what do we have to fix? And the other is, everything is the way it's supposed to be and we'll get to where we're supposed to get when we get there.
Well, that sounds a little like the Gandalf.
Either way, it's a question of, where are we in the present? Whether the past is right and wrong, it's not our place really to judge. What we are here is, we can learn from it. And if we learn from it, then everything, we transform it to being a positive thing, even though what happened may have been negative. But we've taken something out of it. It's had a purpose and a reason. So, to say what the problems are, everyone, I'm sure people write about it. There's a lot of why people did it. Biblically, if you go back to the beginning of time, you look all through time, you see God chose many different people, and these people did things that the Bible says not to do. And yet God chose them to be leaders and people in each generation.
Sure.
Very interesting. In other words, we weren't created to be perfect. We were created with faults. We were created with imbalances. We were created to be that way. Because if, in a certain way, if everything was totally balanced, there's no movement.
Yeah.
So in order to create movement, imbalance was created. So imbalance holds balance, and balance holds imbalance. So our never being 100% perfect is exactly the way we're supposed to be. We're perfectly imperfect.
So there are individuals who are playing, or shall we say, serving roles in this experience we call the human race in the now, 2010.
Right.
And the divisions, the prejudices, the grudges and conditions that win judgments that we lay upon each other is all part of the design, all part of the creation?
I would say it's part of the design of the Creator, even if I don't understand it, because I don't want to judge. I'm not interested in judging them right or wrong. I don't agree with things. I think, from my perspective, I wouldn't do it, but that's the way it was. So rather than getting into the negative energy of it, I said, okay, that's the way it was. Let's see what I need to do now. But when you look back at history, people with good intentions created problems. And you look at religions, for example, they started with beautiful ideas, a lot of them, and then the next generation took it in a different direction. A lot of things started with initiated. And in ancient times, there were, I guess, many different elements, many different reasons why people did things. But from one perspective might be is that people understood that there was a power of existence beyond the physical. And the idea of the Tower of Babylon, where the Tower of Babel, according to the Hebrew, it says they were all united, all people understood all languages, they were all one. And that oneness, knowing the power, they knew how to harness the power of oneness in the world to create new things. And they used that power to come together to create what in their mind was a way to eventually have control over everything and not be dependent on the force that everything comes from. So when that happened, and that was their agenda, that agenda caused their downfall, that they all became broken, because they were doing this with their agenda. So they didn't intend to create, to have things this way, but people had their agendas and ideas beyond just being who they are, and that since they tried to get beyond who they are, they fell backwards as well. When you try to add, you detract as well. So
well,
it was part of the balance and imbalance that existed that people may have not fully understood.
Well, I see the tragedy of this, you know, laid out in the scriptures.
That's where we are now.
Right. And I see that the tragedy of this laid out in the scriptures. David, I could name a few others.
God doesn't get involved into the wise, and that's a whole story, and everyone can have their perspectives. What I do is try and focus on the present. How can I exist and be in the present, totally centered, all the time, as much as possible, so that if anything shifts, anything happens, I stay centered?
Sure. We often hear...
The best thing to do is earthquakes go or things shift around us and we feel the shifts. The best thing we could do is find a way within ourselves that we can stay centered.
I agree with that. Some would say in the modern age that we live in the now. And, you know, physicists try to consider or quantify the now. And it's difficult to do. If there was one, as I said earlier, we wouldn't know how fast it moves through space. But we can say, is the now that we perceive a laser point or is it a headlight? Do we consider a little bit of the road ahead of us and a little bit of the road behind us while we are in this spotlight we call the now?
That's interesting. If you look at society with all problems, it's like a broken pencil. If it's a broken pencil, it's pointless.
That's good, right.
Whether you say headlights or whether you say whatever point, they are intellectual perceptions of things. What we're trying to do is not only have an intellectual perception, but have the mind and heart work together simultaneously.
Ah, I like that. Okay, so the heart, which some would say is a perception itself, is really... your spiritual considerations and your mind or your brain is just the lens for the soul. Or you're trying to bring those into alignment one with another. That is what you're saying is the now.
Right.
Very good. I like that a lot. That makes a lot more sense than things I've heard from others, I can tell you.
So let me explain how it works.
Okay.
Last time I checked,
Are you still there? Okay, I seem to have lost his audio. Oh, it's not him, it's me. Hang in there, Earth Explorers. We're going to hear a little ringing right here. It's just the Skype connection. We're going to call right back in. Don't worry about it. Hang on. Sometimes the bandwidth or the computers do strange things, and that's why you're invited to... internet radio. We have a little different problems than you have in regular radio. Radio waves don't stop in the middle of space, but Skype does. It's a little like talking on the cell phone. You never know what's going to happen. So hopefully our producer is watching the screen and notices that the call has ended. Our connection with the studio is temporarily broken. Just hang on one moment, and we will make the connection again. We appreciate your patience. It's about 27 minutes into the second hour of X Squared Radio, and I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. Our guest is on the other end, Rabbi Yossi Sebriansky. His website is revealingthesoul.com. I highly recommend the website because there are a lot of YouTube videos on there. There are a lot of written materials on there that you can make use of and study at your leisure and really begin to understand what Rabbi Yossi is about and what his perspectives are. The interesting thing is that the ancient language that he knows so well, syllable by syllable, of course there are no vowels in the original language, What happens is we appreciate his expertise. So we are now back on the air with Rabbi Yossi. My apologies. We just lost the connection, and now we're back. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
What did I get up to?
We were just talking. You were getting ready to explain something to me, and I said, okay, and then the line went dead. So let's...
Okay. I'll go back to it.
Okay.
I was trying to explain about the heart and the mind working together. That my mind at one point said, okay, my heart has feelings, has emotions. If I want to work with it, I have to accept it. And my heart felt, well, if I have thoughts, mind thinks, it has to accept that as well. When you want a working relationship, each side has to accept the...
Okay.
And when you respect someone and honor them, you listen, and then you look where to go forward after each one gives its idea. So my heart and my mind do the same thing. I think whatever I think, and then I see how to feel about it. I feel whatever I feel, and then I think. I work together in harmony. And I think that if people learned how to do this within themselves, the world would automatically change and be what it's supposed to be.
I don't know if things... Well, I was going to say, I don't know if things work automatically with humans. I have seen things work automatically, but usually we call these temper tantrums. 2-year-olds, everything is an automatic with them. They don't think about anything but what's going on at the moment.
But that would be okay. Children are children, and a lot of temper tantrums, a lot of things are affected by often the things we eat, the things in the environment is... We live in a very toxic society, which creates a lot of imbalances. But if you have, once you have people introspecting and growing themselves and balancing, then the way we teach is by example. The kids would do exactly the same.
Well, usually that's a good thing. I have been told that I was a great dad. And people ask me, how did I learn how to do that? And I said, well, I learned from my parents because I just did the exact opposite of what they did. And that's how I turned out to be a great dad. So hopefully we don't carry it forward by example. But we do learn from the example, that's for sure. And I agree. Teaching and leading by example is the best way.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
so the more people that... think about creation, think about existence, and think about why we're here and what's happening. It's in a sense, it's searching. In a sense, it's letting things be. It's both. When you let everything be what it is and don't judge it, then you look to see where to go with it and from where it is, from that space.
When we look at the anthropological, and what I mean by that is we have sociological conditions that this planet is under right now, and the rate at which things move on the planet right now with this new neural network we call the internet, with Twitter, with Facebook, with email, with Skype, and the ability to talk to one another around the globe instantaneously, the ability to communicate, to transfer ideas, to inspire, to move information almost instantaneously between groups of human beings.
Right.
Our sociological condition is really going through a metamorphosis right now. And I think what I see, Rabbi, is I see that people that I would consider to be rooted in belief, in tradition, in ritual, from what they have learned in their religious training, is being turned upside down, because as fast as they ask a question, they are getting an answer. They can really seek out the wisdom of these things. But what has been missing, I'm pretty sure, is this connection back to the root language. And that's why your perspective is so important to us. What was originally meant for the sociological experiment called Mankind on Earth?
That's a good question. When you go back to ancient times and you look at the buildings around the world and you see that around the world, different societies built the same things, did the same things, and we wonder how did they have a connection, such a perfect connection with each other. And I've also worked with animal communicators, people who work telepathically and can tell you exactly what the animals are saying and what the plants are saying, and it's quite uncanny. My experiment with it, I went with some people who did it to people's homes who had animal problems. They would sit with the animal for a few minutes, communicate telepathically, and tell the people in the house all the problems of the house that the animal said, and they were always 100% correct. So what I saw is that the way the communication was not in the words we use. It was more like pictures, ideas. We also communicate with each other with feelings. We pick up feelings. If you don't translate the feelings into words, or even feelings, it's an amazing space as well. So we have some of the ideas of communication this way. The communication on a soul level or on spiritual levels is not in words we use, but it's really just a transferring of energy that feeling has all the information in it. So in ancient times, when people's spirit was much more whole and complete, their souls were complete, they were also open to a much greater force of spirit or soul energy, so they were able to tap into this much easier and communicate and do things that didn't need so many words.
Well, I can understand we get lost in the word, or we get deceived in the word, or we get divided in the language of words. And maybe this telepathic way is a way of healing this rift. And maybe it was the way we were meant to communicate with one another in the first place. But it seems if the languages were confused the way it was written in the Old Testament, that somebody had a different idea. They didn't want us to communicate one with another, and they stirred up the pot a little bit.
Yeah, I would actually agree that people have stirred up the pot. One of the things that says interesting is that when God brought a revelation at Mount Sinai, and he spoke. Now, firstly, you heard of the Ten Commandments?
Right.
Well, actually, in Hebrew, it doesn't say Ten Commandments. It says ten sayings, or ten manners of speech. It's called Aseret HaDibrot. Dibur is speech. Ten manners of speech. That's a little bit different than Ten Commandments. And it changes the whole book. So that's another interesting topic. But what it says, according to Jewish tradition, that when God spoke, all the people died. Their energy in the body left their bodies. The bodies couldn't contain it anymore, that left. And the people, and then it says God had to put back the energies into the body. And the people said to Moses, please, you talk to us. We cannot contain that speech, that manner of speech. And so Moses was the one that gave over the words. And it was actually, according to Jewish tradition, intended at that point that words shouldn't have to be used anymore and people would be in a space that they wouldn't need it, but people could not hold on to that energy and that power. So what happened was, because people couldn't contain that power, they were given words eventually, and more words and more words. And as people were given words, instead of using these words as a conduit to get beyond the words, they used the words to close themselves even more and become more dependent on words.
Ah, right, right. So this is where the rote memorization and the rituals and the rules and limits came in.
Right.
Wow. Because you really do see that. By the time you get into Numbers and Deuteronomy and on, you're going, oh, gee, only so many steps on a Sunday, and you have to walk counterclockwise or clockwise, and boy, there were just rules and measures for everything, and this was all right. Words.
Mm-hmm.
Goodness.
Right.
Well, so this is how, from an anthropological point of view, we ended up where we are. And I don't really want to use the words ended up, because this is a dynamic process that seems to be changing moment by moment, 24 hours a day, because while it is, you know, now 9:45 p.m. here, it's, you know, close to 5 o'clock in the morning in Israel. And it's even, you know, later in the day tomorrow in the Far East, in China and in Japan. And things are happening at such a rate, real time, that the social condition, the anthropology of mankind, is changing moment by moment. And I guess what I'm trying to get a feel for this hour is, now that we know the root, the real meaning behind some of these ancient words, and I think, you know, I'm each moment with you, I'm unlearning things that I learned when I was a youth that didn't make any sense to me then, but I followed my whole life. And now I'm empowered, I'm sort of freed to really understand what it is I've been feeling and thinking my whole life. Mm-hmm. So maybe mankind is ready to do that as well.
I think it is. Yeah, well, I see a lot more opening, a lot more people aware, and it seems to be reverting and going back on a journey to where it's supposed to be.
Well, I was going to say it's about time, but it's only been 4,000 years since we've been doing this.
Yep. It's about time. We're getting beyond time.
Well, one of the things that you mentioned earlier is, by the time Adam got here, there had already been other races of man that had been here and gone many times before. Share with us your insight on that.
Well, I remember as a child having heard a story about King Solomon. That King Solomon spoke to Ashmedai, the head of the demons, and asked him about creatures of other dimensions, and it says that he asked him to bring him someone from another place, and King of the Demons, Ashmedai, brought him a two-headed man from another place. And then King Solomon eventually said, take him back, and he said, no, I'm not taking you back, it's too far to go. In our time, a 500-year journey to get to that place.
Wow.
So that was an interesting story, which is told of King Solomon, and it's well known in Jewish tradition. But it also got me thinking, because if you read the Ten Sayings, or they're called Ten Commandments, it says, God says, do not make an image or form of me of anything from the heavens above, but from the earth below, things below the earth. So from there, there's already a sense of something above the heavens, something below the earth, to other existences simultaneously as we have here.
Hmm.
Other dimensions, if you wish, or realities. So when I look at these things, it also says in Genesis that the earth, the dry land, that the water was taken away and the dry land appeared. It appears it was there already before, just it was covered. And the same thing, the whole story of creation, if you don't translate in the beginning, you translate the word understands with wisdom, you understand there are other creations or other beings of all different types. And when you come to Adam with pathways, they're all different pathways. So it appears that we have knowledge mainly of the dimension we live in. The dimensions we don't live in are usually only individuals who have understanding and ability to understand them. But it's not for most people. It's like people ask me, well, help me with my past life issues. So, yeah, I've helped some people in that. But for the most, if people fix up the present, the past fixes itself as well. In the same way, if we fix ourselves and the world we live in, then the other dimensions will open up to us and we'll start seeing these other things and relating to these other beings. And it won't be a mystery anymore. But it begins with us centering ourselves.
Well, I'm trying to take away from this something about we as individuals, now born on this planet, you may be 20 years old, you might be 70 years old, this lifetime, have you come to the realization that perhaps you have a lot more experience, more learning, more aptitude, more memory, as it were, than what you have gained in just this mortal lifetime?
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. I think a lot of people have memories of things and seem to know things and don't even know where they know it from.
Right.
There's another question I think, where do thoughts come from? We all have different thoughts, and you know, the thoughts, things happen, we have thoughts, but we have a lot of things come to us and we don't know where they come from. And my perspective of that is that there is a life force, an energy, God, the creator, whatever you want, that gives everyone the thoughts they should have. So while on one hand, we think the thoughts we want, on the other hand, a lot of people don't think the thoughts they want to think. And things come.
Yeah.
And while there are, you know, physical reasons why things come, physiological, spiritual, but ultimately everything is moving because there's a life force beyond everything that moves everything. And without that life force, nothing would move.
Okay. Well, now that life force, it's interesting. You watch the Earth evolve for 4,000 years we were riding horses, and then all of a sudden this industrial revolution started in the mid 1800s, and literally in less than 100 years we're flying, and another 30 years we're on the moon, and now we're freely communicating, or at least receiving information from outside our own heliosphere. All this information poured out upon the earth, and clever people knew how to interpret this information, but the information wasn't always there, or was it? For instance, I look back at the Tibetan stupa, and I look at the coils that Nikola Tesla built, and I see a striking similarity. But the stupa was created in the 7th century, and Tesla lived in the 19th century.
Right.
So has this information always been circling us from the cosmos, and only recently we've been able to pick out the pieces that work? I mean, heavier than air flight was not possible until Melvin Murrell in Morristown, Tennessee, and then Wilbur and Orville Wright showed us how to do it and control it. And then everybody kind of went, oh, yeah, that's how it's done. Next thing you know, we have transcontinental flights just a few years later. So is this information always flowing out there and we are new beings here tapping into it? Or are we bringing that experience forward with us from a previous existence?
The information, all information is universal and exists. And it's only a question of what time, at what time or period is it supposed to be revealed to people. But that doesn't mean individuals don't know about it.
Well, they might know about it, but they might not know what to do about
it. I'll give you an example. A story, it was in the medieval times. I don't know, there are commentaries on the Bible. Rashi, Rabbi Natan, they lived in France maybe 750 years ago. And it was Rabbi Natan. He didn't want to be disturbed of people coming to him, so he created some type of way of having light, like an electric light, and he had electricity in his house, and he also had the front in front of his house a landing that if someone knocked on his door at night and he didn't want them, it automatically it tripped, and so apparently whoever was king of France at that time or that area heard about it and came incognito to him and knocked on his door in the middle of the night, and the spring went down and came up, and he opened the door and said, "Welcome, Your Majesty." And the king said, "How did you know?" He said, "Because it's impossible for what I have here that it should come back up. It's made. What I have here is something that is not for this generation yet." The king said, "I heard you have a light that is always burning without putting this oil and stuff in it." He said, "Yes, but it's not for this generation." That was another story I heard when I was a kid. And what that story told me is that there were people who knew things in older previous generations, who maybe even did things, knew how to generate and do things, but they did not share it because it was not time for it.
Right. Wow. I mean, if you go underneath Dendera, which is was a temple built by the Hathors and then burnt to the ground and rebuilt and then added on to some centuries later, you see what looks like light bulbs cabled up and used to light up the inside of the dark corridors of the underworld. This goes back a long way, incandescent lighting.
And there's no reason they shouldn't know it. If it's all it takes is a thought to do it, and it's a natural thing, why not?
Huh. All right, so the information's always been out there, and now we grasp onto it, we know exactly what to do with it, and we build it, and it works.
Right.
It looks like there's even more information being poured out upon our race of mankind, and we're about to try it. We're about to turn on trans-dimensional engines that will allow us to dance across the expanse of space as easily as we sail from New York to London.
Right.
When we do that, are we going to understand more about the origins, or at least the capabilities of our race, humanity?
Maybe yes, maybe not. The fact that we know more details or become more aware doesn't mean we know more about our origins. You see, one of the things that people often forget is the world is round. And the reason it's round is because it comes from a creator that has no beginning and no end.
Huh.
So, since that existence has no beginning and no end, as we develop and as we go, we will continue going in circles. And we'll learn more and more. It just continues. So, there's no beginning we need to go back to. As we move forward, that beginning moves forward with us in each moment.
Well, again, you know, we look at this from a physics point of view. We're not talking about moving forward through time because, after all, we're just right in the now.
Moving forward in our knowledge and comprehension of things.
There you go. Yeah, we're expanding and growing as individuals. But then the people that know stuff, they pass away. And so they have to pass their knowledge on to the next generation? Or does that individual come back over and over again with more and more experience as time goes on?
You're talking about reincarnation?
Well, some would call it reincarnation, rebirth. I think there's plenty of evidence in the scriptures that we are born again. We have existed in other worlds.
Yeah, actually in Hebrew it's called Gilgal, which means rolling souls. That the soul energies just roll from place to place. They have their journey and they come in and out of bodies. They'll come in, they'll come out, each one in its journey.
Wow, that is really something. So let's talk about that a little bit more as we get into the next hour, because you know, there are sister religions to various traditions, Catholic and Hebrew and Jewish and Mormon and Protestant, and I haven't found much room. I haven't found much. Shall we call it audience for the idea that the soul has a chance to grow through multiple mortal existences?
Okay.
How was that removed from the original writing?
Well, it's the way original writings are translated. They don't really do much of a job in it, but when you start looking at the words, I have some examples on my blog at revealingthesoul.com. It speaks, for example, if you desecrate the Sabbath or you do this, then you'll be cut off. Now, no one kills you, you're not cut off from anyone. What it's talking about, it's talking about being cut off from your soul source. Because you're not doing what you have to do, so you cut yourself off from who you are.
Well, I would say that the soul, the being that makes up Rabbi Yossi, that makes up Brooks, that makes up the listeners to this program, somewhat has, like you say, a rolling identity, a brief intelligence, or at least a spark that is contiguous with the experience of that particular soul, whether we're born in captivity or whether we're born free or wealthy or poor or sick or healthy. But with each life experience, that previous memory is blocked, and our society doesn't teach us to try to bring it back up. It just kind of comes naturally to some people.
Right. If we were to remember the Kabbalah, which is part of Jewish tradition, Kabbalistic writings have many books on reincarnation, soul journeys, and what they are, and it describes them. It's not whole souls or half souls. We each are a combination of bits and pieces of soul that existed in different pieces. So we're not, when someone says they reincarnate from somewhere, they're just actually just a spark of that energy, of that being that's here. So we're a combination, and during our life, different bits and pieces open up and close as they need to. And in Kabbalistic tradition, its interpretation of the words, the Hebrew words of the Bible, it talks about a lot of them as being reincarnation for different reasons and purposes. And what it says is the reason we're blocked is because if people were open to everything, it would be very confusing, very difficult for them to do what they need to do now.
Well, I could see that, yeah. And I think that's maybe why the religious traditions teach us, don't worry so much about that, because if you do, you're not going to pay attention to what you're supposed to be learning now and what you're limited to now, and you're not going to learn what you need to learn.
Mm-hmm. But it is very fascinating how it works, and it does affect us. And we do have the memories there, and they only come up when something opens itself up to us and makes us look at it.
Yeah, I like that. All right, well, we'll talk about this a little bit more in the next hour. My guest tonight, Rabbi Yossi, Sebriansky, known by his friends and the listeners of this program as Rabbi Yossi. I'm Brooks Agnew, and we'll be back in about 6 minutes with more X Squared Radio. Take a break, get a drink of water. We're going to be coming back with the infamous third hour of X Squared Radio.